Hello, today I'm talking to Allison Kane, founder and CEO of Haven's Kitchen, a cooking school, cafe, now a purveyor of ready-made sauces and more, here in chic Chelsea, New York City. We will talk about why a mother of five with an urban planner would start a physical food venture. It's not about the recipes, but providing life skills. How Allison and her team grow the business and made it profitable pretty quickly. Who her strategic target is. How her story relates to that of digital direct brands, the popular founder myth, and whether the good old grocery store is here to stay. Enjoy.
Please listen carefully.
Hello and welcome everyone to this new episode of the Uber Brands podcast, the podcast in which we discuss brands that are desired beyond price, performance, or reason. Brands that seduce rather than sell, and that add some myth to the material. They shine from the inside out. We call them Uber Brands, and that is JP Kuhwein and your occasional co-host Wolf Schaefer. And today I'm excited to have Allison Kane with me. Allison is the owner of Haven's Kitchen in New York. Thanks for having us, actually.
Yes, thanks for being here.
We're in this beautiful townhouse. Allison, tell us, what is your kitchen, your Haven's Kitchen, all about?
Well, we are in an 18th century carriage house on 17th Street in Manhattan that hadn't been used in many years when I came upon it and decided that it would be the perfect place to build a recreational cooking school and cafe and event space. It was 2011 and New Yorkers were just starting to understand that cooking with seasonal ingredients was good for them and good for the environment, but they didn't really know where to go to get those skills, and there was no place that was teaching them in Manhattan. So I fell in love with this building and immediately built a kitchen, built a little shop in front, and used these two floors for special events, weddings, corporate parties, brand activations, anything really that matches our mission. And the mission is really building confidence through food, cooking, and community.
Wow, so you've got it all together already, the mission, the place, the brand,
you know,
the events.
Yeah, I mean, the mission was very simple for me because, you know, I always found comfort in cooking, and it always made me feel capable and strong, and I had a feeling of self-efficacy. You know, from a very early age, if I felt like eating Waldorf salad, I knew how to make Waldorf salad. And I think there's really something to be said.
Empowering.
Yes, for being able to feed yourself what you feel like eating. And so the flip side of it is that I never learned how to ride a bike as a kid. I always felt like people would say, oh, it's just as easy as riding a bike, you know, but I never knew how to ride a bike. So that was lost on me. And it occurred to me that cooking is like riding a bike. If you don't watch someone do it and you don't grow up, you know, kind of learning how to understand what rice is, you know, when you're making it, why would you think that it would be intuitive as an adult? So we kind of take people back to getting them the skills that they need to learn how to do something that makes them feel good about themselves. And also bringing joy to it, because if something gives you a lot of anxiety and stress, you're not going to want to do it or practice it, which is why I called it Haven's Kitchen, because it should feel like a safe haven to you, cooking and your kitchen.
Wow. The story sounds incredibly consistent and thought through. Was it like this from the beginning? I mean, was it as easy as saying, I want to learn how to ride a bike, let's do a kitchen? Where did this come from in the first place?
I mean, I think it came from me, just in the sense that I had always been teaching cooking in my house to friends and friends of friends.
But were you in the hospitality business?
No.
Or in the cooking business of any kind?
No, I worked in urban planning for a couple of years, and then I had five children in 8 years. So I was in the hospitality business in my house.
Right.
Basically feeding a lot of people all the time, and friends of friends and my kids' friends, and, you know, And I went back to get a master's degree in food studies. And as part of that degree, I had to get an internship at 38, which was a little funny. But I got a job at the Union Square Green Market giving farmers market tours. And then I wanted to bring those two things together and just open a place. I really just, like a lot of people, I wanted to open the place that I wanted to go to that didn't exist.
Right.
So I wanted a place that made me feel not like yes chef, no chef, but oh, this is fun and look at all these beautiful vegetables and I'm going to get to know what to do with them. And I'm not going to follow recipes. I'm just going to learn how to actually cook.
Right.
Which are two different things. And one of them gets you a recipe and the other gets you a life skill.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So that was fairly straightforward. Little nuances shifted over the years. The cafe that you see now was a retail shop at the beginning with lots of olive oils and things for the table. That changed because that wasn't really what my customer wanted. They wanted soup in the afternoon. They didn't want to go back to work carrying their olive oil. You know, so I had to kind of change a couple of, you know, the little pieces to fit more with what my customer wanted more than what my original vision was. But in terms of the mission and I think the, you know, who we are as a company and what we represent, that has been very consistent from the beginning.
So there's a balance there, if you like, a little bit. You have a vision and you're not going off that, but how you get there or the details of execution seems like you're just to actually what happens downstairs in the store. So that's a lot of help, I guess, if you have your clients right in your house versus having to do focus groups or do field visits or something like that.
And that's how we ended up launching the sauces, because we have 6 classes a week, we have 15 students a night, and we have 300 guests in the cafe a day. And we were able to sort of ask them, what would make cooking easier for you? Why don't you cook?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you cook? You know, what are the flavors that you crave? What do you eat outside of your home that you wish that you could recreate in your home? And how can we help you do that? And we weren't doing it from a market research perspective. We weren't bringing in focus groups. We were genuinely asking because we wanted to be the best that we could be for our guests. And as it turned out, most of them would, you know, would kind of say, we know how to roast a chicken, we know how to grill, you know, a steak, we kind of know how to make rice. Sometimes it comes out goopy, sometimes it comes out great. But what we really need is help with the sauce. We need those flavors that make things taste really good without all of the work and the chopping and the shopping and the cleanup. And so that's why we launched a product line.
So that was not in the original plan.
No, not at all.
You were not originally planning to be on supermarket shelves or...
No, not at all.
It's interesting because right now I'm doing a little bit of research on platforms, you know, digital platforms, etc. And one of the incredible, powerful aspects of platforms is they can grow almost organically.
Yeah.
If you think of Airbnb, they thought that they rent, you know, people who need money to subsidize their rent out to others, and now it's become Airbnb experiences, Airbnb luxury, etc. Through interacting constantly with the participants on the platform. But you're telling me a little bit the same thing.
Yeah.
You have your own platform here, which is the school and the coffee shop. And you get feedback through behavior, through conversations. I think you even told me at one time you get insights on how people manage their money or, you know,
I think of everything that we're doing is kind of trying to find that sweet spot between staying true to ourselves and how we view this company, but also letting our customers and our guests sway us a little bit. And we can tell when we've let it out a little too far because it doesn't feel true to us anymore. Our guests, there are a couple of different prototypes, but one of them is, you know, a 29-year-old woman who is working her ass off in some job, and she is hustling, and she feels pretty good about herself, but she's not sure her life is completely in order just yet. And cooking a meal for a couple of friends actually makes her feel like, all right, you know what? I've got myself together here. And I was able to host a couple people. I was able to make a really good meal. I took a great Instagram of it. It looked beautiful. That same guest also could use a little bit of help figuring out what you know, her accounting should look like, or what her relationships could be like, or she might be thinking about founding her own company and wants to know some information about that. And because our overarching, you know, mission is about confidence and self-efficacy and validating that there is something in you that hasn't been tapped and we're going to help you figure it out, we do have this sort of platform to say, all right, we're going to gather a bunch of experts and just help you kind of, you know, figure out stuff. Right. It might be food related, it might not. We have the opportunity to reach people, I think, in a lot of different ways.
So in a way, from this feedback, you also get a sense that your manifestation of the brand, of the mission, mm-hmm. creates meaning to your clients, to your
absolutely.
Customers, that go far beyond the sauce and the chicken.
Oh, absolutely.
The sauce and the chicken is a tool, if you
absolutely.
Like, is a means.
Exactly. No, I mean, the goal is, at the end of the day, any interaction, whether it's in person, online, or through a product with this brand, should make someone feel,
right,
I'm okay, I've got this, right. You know, that's our job. We're like Glinda the Good Witch.
How do you decide where to go? I mean, you do weddings here.
Yep.
You do cooking. I guess it's as intimate discussions as you would have at a hair salon, where I've had experience with that. When do you decide, well, yeah, but financial consulting
right.
is not really our thing?
Yes. I mean, I took a look at the business in late 2016 and sort of sat down with myself and said, well, this has come further than I ever thought it would. You know, my goal was to have it sustain itself, and it does, and it has since year two. I have this incredible team. We have a really strong value proposition and mission that we all live by and believe in.
How big is your team?
So I have 17 full-time, about 70 kind of consistently working, and then on payroll about 120. Just because we have baristas and teaching assistants and bartenders
right.
and servers and teachers.
And now you're extending into
the
production of the
yes.
sauce, actually, on a more industrial scale.
Yes, yes. So I did. I kind of looked at each revenue stream, right? Because great ideas aren't necessarily great businesses.
Right.
Great products aren't necessarily great businesses either. So what is the thing that we can execute the best, that's the most aligned with the mission, that also could be potentially scalable?
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, creating content is not our core business. That is sort of tertiary. But what we can do is we can expand on both the mission and grow the scale of the business with products that go into people's homes that you could potentially, you know, make into a really big brand.
Right. Okay. So that's been the guide. Because you have auxiliary products, you have a cookbook.
Yep.
So you have a cook school, you have a coffee
mm-hmm.
shop, you have your sauces.
I have a podcast.
You have a podcast. Right.
But,
right.
You know.
Okay. So
yeah.
it is a portfolio already.
Yes.
Now, to kind of burst the bubble a little bit for all these aspiring startup founders.
Money.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, this doesn't come out of nowhere.
Right.
When you started up, this is not a live on 15 credit cards debt kind of a story, right?
No. And, you know, I'm very, very open about that, because I think that we live a little bit in a founder fetish culture. And as happy as I am that people listen to my podcast about how to, you know, start consumer, you know, packaged goods companies, I don't think everyone should be starting a consumer packaged good company. You read a lot of sort of, they raised $10 billion overnight. Well, actually, it took them 15 years, and they were living on their brother's couch for 8 of those. So I'm very honest with the, you know, I had a nest egg. I used that nest egg to open Haven's Kitchen. I did not have any investors. I was very, very lucky that we broke even year two.
Which is exceptional.
Myself.
I mean,
it
in a high-cost environment like
it's crazy.
New
I
York
mean,
and with
yep.
a capital-intensive business
yes.
or at least
yeah.
lease-intensive business
yes.
like this one,
was,
what were you thinking?
I mean,
did you expect it to break even that quickly?
You know, I didn't expect it to break even that quickly, but I also expected it to break even in a different way. So I thought we would be having three cooking classes a day, 8 days a week, you know, and have 40
romantic,
very romantic. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that we would be doing weddings. I had no idea that we were going to be. I thought we would be doing dinner parties and, you know, corporate team building. And there is a lot of research about sort of parallel play and teams that cook together. All these magical things happen rather than doing trust falls or bowling or, you know.
Right.
Going
so
to
corporate
a dinner
events.
Party. Corporate yeah. events I knew, but I had no idea.
That, and you're also doing PR events, I think, for brand, quite a lot
yeah,
of them.
Yeah, we do
actually.
A ton of brand activations because we have a full culinary team. So if you come to me with your new makeup brand and you want it to elicit sort of summer berry feelings for your new line of lipsticks, then we can do an entire event around summer berries and relate it back to your lipstick.
So this business growth allowed you to break even quite quickly.
Yes.
It allowed you to fund kind of an expansion.
Yes.
But my understanding is kind of the sauces is the next big one, and
yes.
there you really wanted to bring in not only capital, but also expertise.
Yes. You know, candidly, this is all new to me. So I don't just want, you know, cash. I do want sort of that strategic, you know, value.
So you want really
investor.
A strategic investor who also brings expertise.
Exactly.
And in fact, assets
yeah.
to the table.
Absolutely. You know,
and
there
that's
is a
your
playbook
production
here.
And
yeah.
Now, just before we started recording, interestingly, you told me people are starting to come to you
yes.
for expertise in how to build brands
yeah.
that would be sold at a grocery store. Can you explain again, why is that expertise relevant and why are they coming to you as a startup?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think that there has been the zeitgeist of the last several years have been the grocery store is dead. These slotting fees and these circulars and these curmudgeonly buyers that don't understand how great our product is. We can bypass that entire system. Everything's online. Everything swipe up to buy, Instagram, Facebook, you know, digitally native. And that makes sense for a lot of products.
And it gets a lot of press, this product.
Yes.
Direct to consumer, digital
yes.
platform.
A couple of things have happened. A, the cost of acquiring a consumer online has gone up exponentially. First, it started with Facebook. It's now starting to happen with Instagram and Pinterest.
Are you on Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook?
We're on Instagram. I think we're on Facebook, although I can't say that
You're
I pay
active.
Much attention
yeah.
to it. I do Pinterest, although I haven't used it really to market the sauces just yet, but we're starting to think about that.
Right.
It is a very good place.
I mean, food lends itself
yes.
against visual appeal.
Absolutely. Right. And one, it depends on your category. So if you are a fresh product or a frozen product, it's going to be very, very challenging to be digitally native and have no distribution in stores because A, the cost of acquisition is really high, but also the cost of fulfillment and shipping. And
yep.
you have to build that infrastructure and it's really expensive. There's a reason why someone like me goes to Whole Foods, you know, instead of trying to sell sauce directly to people in the internet world, you know, who's buying sauce that way? The reality is that 90% of groceries are still bought in store. And it might not be as fast of a revolution as people are thinking. A lot of digitally native brands, first of all, now you see like Schoenfelds and things like that, where there are stores that are places for digitally native brands to have physical presences, whether it's like a selfie opportunity with the brand or you get to actually taste it or try it or, you know, whatever it is. So I think people are starting to realize that followers does not equal community. That's not the same thing. And I think also I think there's a lot of fatigue. I think people are scrolling through their phones and they see so many of the same things that look exactly like the same thing. And they might want to touch it or feel it or taste it. And you do need...
Or meet other people.
Right. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Imagine that. Like an actual person. Yeah. And I think the last piece of it is that, you know, it's what I learned in your class. The more influencers exist out there and the more that they are representing, the less trust consumers have in them.
Right.
So there was a real peak, right? If someone held a sauce in their hand and said, I like this, it worked. That doesn't really work so much anymore. So it's kind of going back a little bit to the in-store experience. And those curmudgeonly buyers, they hold a lot of power. And those slotting fees, that's an investment in your brand, saying we're going to give your brand some very coveted shelf space, and now it's your job to make sure it goes off of the shelf.
So you believe in the retail, at least as far as grocery goes.
I am not a fashion person, I'm not a makeup person, but I am a fresh grocery person, and for the time being, my eggs are in that basket. I have a team of people doing demos all day long. We are bringing coffee to the buyers. We are making friends with them. Absolutely. That I'm doubling down on analog.
And now back to, why do investors go to you though with a couple of years maximum experience?
Well, I think a couple of things. One is, one investor asked me.
Okay.
So I'm not getting calls. I'm not like fielding, you know, multiple calls from multiple people asking for my advice. And I've gotten into the system.
Right.
And I've yes, it's limited. I'm not General Mills, but I do have a brand that in a year has a lot of distribution, has great velocities at Whole Foods. And that's not accidental.
Right.
You know, yes, it's because it's a good product, but there's something more to it. And I think they recognize that.
It actually doesn't surprise me. I talked to Ramdam Touamé in Paris a couple of months ago. He has created Sir Trudon, the candles, the scented candles. Or he has revived it, I should say. It's been around since the 18th century. And while I was interviewing him, there were people from Shiseido.
Mm-hmm.
In his store.
Yep.
And I said, what are they doing there? And he said, oh, I get L'Oreal Shiseido all the time, because they need to relearn how to credential, how to create experiences, how to go beyond digital, because obviously, like all pendulum swings, there's a desire now for people again for the real thing.
In
you know,
real
you want to know again where stuff comes from.
Yeah.
You want to surround yourself with an experience. You want to feel part of something.
Yeah.
Which brings me back to Haven's Kitchen. In Uber brands, we talk about the Uber target. It's often called the design target. It's not necessarily everyone who buys your product.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people who get really involved, who might even be muses.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have such people in this operation? And if yes, what are they like? Who are they?
I mean, I think it goes back to that 29-year-old woman. One of the women that runs my field marketing is actually kind of my muse in a way, because she is the hardest worker, you know, I've ever met. She lives and breathes for her values, and they completely overlap with her work. There is no separation. There is no work-life balance. And all she really needs is someone to say, I'll take care of that for you. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
She just needs someone in her life to say, I'll walk the dog today. I'll get the milk. I'll help you with the sauce. You don't have to do everything all the time. You don't always have to be hustling. You don't always have to be shiny. You don't always have to be pleasant. You can just relax for a couple minutes and I'll help you.
That's the role you want to
fill. That's our role. Whether it's a mom who just wants to get dinner on the table, or a single dad who wants to prove to himself that he can feed his kids, or it's this 29-year-old who's just been working her ass off and just needs a break and needs someone else to make the sauce. We have such a culture, I think, of, you know, we worship the hustle. You know,
right.
We worship this, like, you go, girl, you get him. You're so, you know, you're badass. You're this, you're that. Sometimes a badass wants someone to just give her a hug and like help her with dinner.
But it's still the badass though.
It's always
you're not for the already relaxed hippie, etc. Okay, so it's the alpha girls.
Or guys.
You okay,
know?
Who need a little help
need,
though from time to
time. Yeah, just like
gotcha.
It's Yoda.
Now, why are they not going though to any other packaged goods or any other food? Because isn't that the entire point of consumer packaged goods. It's convenient, it's there, yeah, right for you. Why not grab whatever, a Kind Bar, an RX Bar, or even a Campbell's Soup? What's different then with your product that appeals to them uniquely?
Right. I mean, I think that, you know, there are days where they do. But when they want to feel like some sort of grounded connection to food, you know, you can drink Soylent and be perfectly functional, but does that satisfy eating a meal, making a meal, inviting a couple of friends over, having a bottle of wine and talking about your day and feeling like, okay, I have my life together. I can feed the people I love and myself, and it didn't take me that long. It's actually quicker to saute some string beans and put my sauce on it than it is to order in. And less expensive. And, you know, yeah, are there days where they eat a bar for dinner and drink a bottle of wine? Probably.
And is there
not
a kind of a kinsmanship made by people who hustle for people who hustle?
You know what? You just came up with my new slogan. Yeah, I mean, I relate to that. Don't you relate to that?
You're a New Yorker. I'm German.
Right. I guess so. We're only really four New Yorkers. No, I'm kidding. We are inundated with messages about how we're supposed to do better and be better and also be politically active and also fight for our beliefs and also be all of these things, and we're all tired,
right?
And we just need a little help.
No, we said that in jest, but this is very New York. This is a very big city. Do you see trends, or is this just as appealing in St. Louis as it is in New York City?
Secondary cities right now. I mean, I don't even call them secondary cities, but that's how they're referred to. I mean, Charleston, Nashville, you know, Detroit, people are moving to those places to build businesses and to start families and to, you know, make their lives. People are actually moving out of places like Manhattan because it's getting too expensive to do it and to do it well. So yeah, I think that this translates. I mean, Houston, definitely.
And you get the orders from Houston and Charlotte?
We get a lot of interest. We don't have distribution there yet because I'm a slow and steady wins the race kind of gal. And this is the kind of product that you really need to make sure that when you go to a new region, you have all of the resources to support that region.
Right. Now, you are about fresh product, but you also told me there are limits in terms of how far you go with, let's say, organic, natural, and all that.
Yeah.
You're not into the, let me be the most organic, lowest CO2 footprint or whatever.
I can't be and
why
not have
that?
A $20 product.
Right.
Because all the things you want to be are all the way out here.
You would want to be.
Of course.
Right.
I'd want to be in a package that decomposes before
right.
it's even in the garbage.
So how do you balance then between the want to be and right. what you actually decide to
you
do?
You know, you make a couple of things that are non-negotiables. You know, to us, Romesco sauce needs to have piquillo peppers. It needs to. It's part of the essence of what Romesco is.
Okay.
Those are very expensive for us. So we're going to have an expensive cost of goods on one of those ingredients of Romesco. That means that for the rest of the ingredients, we try to find, you know, the best for the price constraints that we can. Non-GMO, non-negotiable for us. Organic, more negotiable for us based on a lot of our ingredients coming from a Spanish producer who isn't going to get a USDA organic sign. Or, for example, it's very hard to find vinegars, like a sherry vinegar, that is non-GMO certified, because vinegars traditionally are just very hard to find non-GMO. So sherry vinegar is something that is usually used in Romesco. We're going to be using apple cider vinegar because we can get the non-GMO. So everything's kind of like a little bit of a balance. You know, we're trying to do our best, but we can't have a $12 product because that's not going to be the mission. That's not going to get more people cooking more comfortably and deliciously, right?
Gotcha.
It's going to be a few people, and it's not really worth it to us to do that.
So you went from kind of flagship cooking school coffee shop to starting packaged goods.
Mm-hmm.
If we look forward and we say Haven's Kitchen in 15, 20 years from now, what do you imagine?
Well, the way that I think about it is I'd like to create a real legacy brand with all sorts of products that make cooking easier and more delicious and more convenient for people. For me, I think that means many different categories of the grocery store. That could certainly expand into other categories.
Beyond food?
Yeah, okay. Sure. I don't think I'll necessarily be running it in 15 years. I think we're going to hit a place where there are a lot smarter and more experienced people that could probably do a
Is there something organizationally you already do now to set that up?
No, I'm just keeping my eye on my own capacity and my own skill set. And right now I'm learning everything I can, and I think I'm running this pretty well. When we get to, you know, 50 million, 100 million in sales, am I going to be the best person to be CEO? I don't know. I didn't think I'd be doing this, so I don't know. But I leave it open. I think this brand has a lot of potential. I don't think there's someone else out there on the grocery store shelves. There's Martha.
The Stewart Martha?
The Stewart Martha. And, you know, there are a couple of other sort of like cooking teachers.
Right.
But if you think about those brands, they're very much connected to those personalities. They're not connected to your personality. You know, they're not about helping you. They're right. about helping you be more like Martha.
Right.
That's not our goal.
And it's not Allison's
It's not
kitchen.
Allison's kitchen, no.
Excellent. Wonderful. Well, thank you for that. Allison, if people want to engage with the brand, what's the best way for them
I
to get in touch?
Instagram is a good way, and they can DM or just go to havenskitchen.com.
And your address in New York is?
109 West 17th Street, between 6th and 7th.
There you go, everyone. So you know where to have lunch next time you come to New York.
Yeah.
Thanks again
yes,
for having us
for
here.
Coming.
And you, dear listener, you can, of course, always reach us. That's at info@uberbrands.com. And Uberbrands is spelled with a U-E, as it should be. write to us if you like the podcast. You know, rate it, tweet it, tell your friends the usual spiel. And otherwise, thanks again.
Thank you.
Tschüss.